Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of PhD BNM. Today, we'll explore the fascinating world of hematology. So, let's begin. I'm Stefano Leto, a second year PhD student, and I'll be your host for this episode. Today, we'll focus on a topic that's crucial in our field, the challenge of therapeutic resistance and risk progression in hematologic cancers. Despite advances in treatment, the resistance to therapy and associated risk remain significant obstacles, often leading to relapse or complications. Today, we are joined by three researchers who are going to talk about different aspects of these challenges. I'll be sharing my research on resistance in acute promyelocytic leukemia and potential new therapeutic targets. Then we'll hear from Giorgia Micucci, who is examining the thrombotic risk in myeloproliferative neoplasms, focusing on the inflammatory mechanism linked to the disease progression. Following that, Irene Casalin will discuss the combined effects of azacitidine and venetoclax in myelodysplastic syndromes and explore ways to combat resistance. And finally, Karina Volkova will present her research on the protective effects of the bone marrow environment on leukemic cells treated with venetoclax. Together, we hope to share insights that could drive new and more effective treatments for hematologic malignancies. So I'll start with my research. It focuses on the challenge of resistance in acute promyelocytic leukemia, or APL. Just for some background, APL is part of a larger group of leukemias known as acute myeloid leukemia, which is the most common type of leukemia in adults. APL is a subtype characterized by a specific genetic mutation, which is relatively rare. Just to give you some information about epidemiology, APL accounts for 5 to 15% of all adult leukemias, and it tends to progress rapidly if it's left untreated. Fortunately, most APL patients initially respond very well to the standard treatment, which combines the use of all-trans retinoic acid and arsenic trioxide, with around 90% of patients achieving a complete remission. However, there's a subset of patients, about 10% of all APL cases and up to 30% among the high-risk cases, who develop resistance to this treatment. And for these patients, there are currently limited effective options if the tumor relapses. In my project, I'm working with two cell lines, the MB4 cell line, which is a promyelocytic cell line responsive to ATRA, and R4, which is an ATRA-resistant derivative. And I'm specifically looking at PLC beta-1 gene, which is involved in cell signaling in relation to APL cell growth. By silencing PLC beta-1 and other sets of genes involving, for example, epigenetic modulators, in particular genes that regulate chromatin structure and gene expression, I'm observing the effects on leukemic cell growth, cell differentiation, and apoptosis, with the final aim of understanding if they are involved in a common epigenetic signaling pathway. By turning these genes off, I hope to see a reduction in the growth of leukemic cells and an increased differentiation, especially in the ATRA-resistant cell line. So if successful, my project could pave the way for alternative therapies that target these pathways, offering new options for patients who currently have few treatment choices. So it's a small step, but it could lead to more personalized approaches for those facing resistance in APL. So this is what my project is about. Now we are going to hear from the next speaker, who is Dr. Giorgia Micucci.
Good Good afternoon to everybody. I'm Giorgia Micucci, and the topic of my research is thrombin generation and study of the crosstalk between TGF-beta and protease-activated receptors, called PARs, in patients with myeloproliferative neoplasms. Myeloproliferative neoplasms are a heterogeneous group of chronic hematological diseases. They comprise different clinical and histological entities, like essential thrombocytemia, polycythemia vera, and myelofibrosis. All the MPNs neoplasms share common features. First of all, a chronic inflammatory state. Then, the high risk of thrombohemorrhagic events that are significantly increased compared to the general population, and then the risk of progression to a higher degree of fibrosis and evolution into acute leukemia. It's important to note that chronic inflammation guides not only thrombosis, but also clonal evolution and disease progression. So we aim to further investigate with this research the thromboinflammatory state, characteristic of MPNs, and responsible for the vicious interconnection between hypercoagulability, fibrosis, and evolution of the disease. Our purpose is to conduct an in-depth study of the thrombin generation and of the signaling crosstalk between the TGF-beta and PARs pathways in patients affected by MPNs. So, samples from about 50-60 MPN patients will be collected at diagnosis and at the time of fibrotic progression of the disease. We will investigate the protease function of thrombin and caspase 1, together with the pro-inflammatory cytokines IL-1-beta and IL-18, responsible for thrombosis and fibrotic progression in patients with chronic myeloproliferative neoplasms and in healthy donors as control group, age and sex matched. The primary endpoint will be to prove the correlation between an increased thrombin generation and increased pathways of inflammation. The secondary endpoint is to correlate the proteasic function of thrombin and caspase 1 with the clinical and laboratoristic data collected, like the rate of thrombosis, thrombotic events, the recurrence rate of thrombosis, the fibrotic progression, and the evolution of the disease to a fibrotic end stage or transformation in acute leukemia. So, in this context of thromboinflammation, the proteases investigated could be the key elements that offer a potential therapeutic target, both to reduce the risk of vascular events and to slow the fibrotic progression of the disease. And this is all from my side.
Thank you, Giorgia. The next speaker is Dr. Irene Casalin.
Hi, everyone. Thank you again, Stefano, for introducing me. And today I'd like to take you through my research, which investigates the therapeutic strategies for high-risk myelodysplastic syndromes and acute myeloid leukemia. Specifically, I am focusing on how combining drugs like azacitidine and venetoclax might improve treatment outcomes for these patients. First, let's talk briefly about some background. MDS is a group of clonal disorders caused by malignant transformation in hematopoietic stem cells. This transformation disrupts normal blood cell formation, or the mechanism called hematopoiesis, which can lead to bone marrow abnormalities and, for some patients, progression to AML. For patients with high-risk MDS, stem cell transplantation is currently the most effective treatment. But due to donor availability challenges and transplant-related risks, we need alternative strategies. One such therapy is azacitidine, an hypomethylating agent that's now the standard first-line treatment. Azacitidine works by inhibiting DNA methyltransferases, which can lead to the reactivation of genes that regulate cell growth and differentiation. However, not all patients respond to azacitidine alone. And that's why MDS and AML are complex diseases, driven by multiple molecular factors, such as disrupted phosphoinositis signaling and resistance to apoptosis in immature cells. One potential solution is combining azacitidine with venetoclax. Venetoclax is a drug that selectively inhibits BCL2, a protein that blocks cell death pathway. When BCL2 is inhibited, proapoptotic proteins can trigger cell death in leukemic cells, improving patient outcomes. While this combination shows great promises, we still don't fully understand how these drugs work together at the molecular level. That's where my research comes in. My project aims to investigate how venetoclax affect affects phospholipase C-related signaling pathways and how these changes impact cell differentiation and apoptosis, both in leukemic cell models and MDS patients. In our ex vivo analysis, we discovered a new frame shift mutation in BCL2 at baseline in our high-risk MDS patients. This mutation is still a bit of a mystery, but what's even more intriguing is that we found no clear correlation between the mutation and treatment response. But what we did observe is that patients who responded to azacitidine or azacitidine plus venetoclax therapy showed a significant increase in the expression of PLC beta 1 and BAX, a proapoptotic gene. This suggests that the regulation of phosphoinositide and apoptotic pathways might be the key in determining whether a patient responds to treatment. That's why then we switch into our in vitro models using two different leukemic cell lines, THP1 and MV4-11, which have different sensitivities to venetoclax. In recent experiments, after AZA plus VEN treatment, we saw significant changes in cell cycle, particularly an increase in the sub-G0 phase, a hallmark of increased cell death after treatment. Real-time PCR analysis also showed elevated level of CD14, an hematopoietic marker for mature monocytes, as well as an increase in the expression of PLCs. At the protein level, we also saw an increase of PLC gamma 2 between the two cell lines, suggesting complex modulation of proliferative signals. But also at the protein level, we observed a notable decrease in the phosphorylation of AKT across both cell lines. Even more intriguing, phosphorylation of GSK3-beta only occurred in MV4-11 cells, suggesting again that these cell lines have a distinct way of regulating proliferation and apoptosis. And when we looked at apoptosis more closely, we confirmed a caspase-dependent mechanism with increased annexin-5 staining and cleavage of PARP by caspase-3. So, what does all this mean? By understanding this intricate molecular mechanism, we can potentially identify new therapeutic targets and refine existing treatment. Ultimately, my hope is that this research will contribute to more effective and personalized therapy for patients with high-risk MDS or AML, leading to better outcomes and higher quality of life for those affected by this disease. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you found this drive into MDS and AML, as well as the potential of combination therapies, as fascinating as I do. At this point, I will hand over to my colleague, Karina, who will analyze another aspect of the treatment with venetoclax and the importance of the bone marrow microenvironment.
Hi, everyone. My name is Karina Volkava, and I'm starting my PhD project this year. In the next 3 years, I will focus on understanding how a healthy microenvironment could be exploited by leukemic cells to promote their own survival, resulting in drug resistance in a significant subset of patients. As Irene said before, nowadays, in acute myeloid leukemia patients, venetoclax and azacitidine leads to higher complete remission rates and more prolonged overall survival in all those patients who are ineligible for intensive chemotherapy. However, relapse and refractoriness remain still an issue. From a molecular perspective, leukemic cells employ several mechanisms to reshape the surrounding environment in order to inactivate the beneficial effects of a drug. And this is why we will investigate how leukemic cells are able to interact with healthy cells and which pathways are involved. The macroenvironment I will focus on in my research is the bone marrow niche, where hematopoiesis, that is the production of new blood cells, occurs. In acute myeloid leukemia patients, it is also where the expansion of leukemic cells begins, starting from a precursor cell with some genetic lesions. Specifically, I will investigate the molecular pathways responsible for the cell-to-cell interaction between leukemic cells and healthy cells within the bone marrow niche, identify molecular targets which could be helpful in avoiding the resistance to drug under our study. In previous studies, my research group discovered that leukemic cells, which interact directly with mesenchymal stromal cells, which are a kind of support cells in the bone marrow niche, show completely different genetic asset compared to leukemic cells grown alone. In our studies, we will use leukemic model cell lines, both sensitive and resistant to drugs under study, grown in co-culture with mesenchymal stromal cells isolated from healthy donors. This two-dimensional cellular model will aim to replicate the physiological conditions of the macroenvironment of interest. Subsequently, we will test a three-dimensional model of leukemic cells and healthy donor cells that will more accurately reflect what happens in the bone marrow.
Okay, thank you, Carina. Thank you all for sharing your research. So it's clear that we are working on different projects, but there is a common goal, which is to understand and overcome resistance and disease progression in hematologic cancers. So as a final question, I'd like to hear from you on where you see your research heading in the next few years. So, for example, what are some potential clinical applications or future directions?
Yes, in my case, I hope that the 3D model that we are trying to develop right now could be helpful to recreate a cellular model which could substitute animal models, maybe not so in 3 years, but we will need more time to assess it. But it will be easier also to use cells come from patients and to try specific drugs on their cells before the treatment.
In my case, instead, future challenges may include understanding the variability in patient responses and translating this finding into target therapies. For example, discoveries like the BCL2 frame shift mutation and cell-specific signaling pathways changes highlight the complexity of MDS and AML. And of course, by unveiling these mechanisms, my research, and I think also the research in this field, aims to identify different biomarkers of response and in order to develop more effective and personalized treatment, improving the outcomes of these patients. So I hope to further understand the mechanism of the interaction of these two drugs in order, of course, as I said, to potentially uncover new therapeutic targets that could improve the outcomes in these patients.
And in my case, they understand the inflammation and the thromboinflammation mechanism in these patients is crucial to reduce the thrombotic events and to slow the fibrotic progression. So, as I before mentioned, the study, the in-depth study of the proteases and cytokines, inflammatory cytokines, will help to find the therapeutic target to give patients a longer life with their chronic disease.
Thank you all for sharing your research again and your thoughts about the future perspectives. With that, we wrap up today's episode. So thank you for joining us on this journey. Stay tuned for more episodes of PhD BNM. And until next time.